Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to recite together one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2. Prayers by the Demigods, text number 31. Vayam samuttirya sadustaram dhyuman. Bhavarnavam bhimam adhabra sorda. Bhavat bhavat padam boruha navam atrate. Nidhaya yata sad anugraho bhavan. Translation. O Lord, who resemble the shining sun, you are always ready to fulfill the desire of your devotee. And therefore, you are known as a desire tree. Vancha kalpaturu. When acharyas completely take shelter under your lotus feet, in order to cross the fierce ocean of nescience, they leave behind on earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. Very nice verse to remember and recite and to hear. From Srimad Bhagavatam on the disappearance day of a great Vaishnava, Vaishnava Acharya. This verse describes. It describes the relationship between the personality of Godhead and his dear beloved devotees. The personality of Godhead has great affection for all living entities. Yayatam mam prapadyante tangsataiva vajam yaham. For those living entities who have affinity for him in love, he reciprocates in love. For those Kamsa-like, Hiranyakashipu-like, Ravana-like, small but like personalities, they have an inimical attitude toward the Supreme Lord. And so, not that he holds inimical feelings towards them, but he reciprocates. You'd like to see me as your enemy? Very well. I can do like that. I'll take the role of your enemy. And the devotee he delivers and the non-devotee he delivers. In this way, he's equally disposed. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. Name dveshosti na priyaha. Neither dvesha nor priya. He doesn't hold something against someone. Although when there's combat with demons, it sounds like it. Chivalrous talk sometimes. But he holds no animosity. He's simply reciprocating with their mood and he delivers them. In several lectures, I heard Srila Prabhupada speak. He described that all those who were on the Kurukshetra battlefield and saw Krishna as they were being killed, they attained their swarup. They not only were sayuja, liberation, but they attained their swarup just by seeing Krishna as they're leaving their body. Krishna is so kind. So what to speak of Grandfather Bhishma, who desired upon his leaving his body to see the personality of Godhead just before his eyes. During the morning class, we were discussing the arrangement of Grandfather Bhishma to have Krishna break his promise, because Krishna made Grandfather Bhishma break his promise that tomorrow morning I'll kill the Pandavas with these five arrows. But when Krishna cleverly arranged for the five arrows to be taken from Duryodhana, in that way Bhishma's promise was broken. He who never breaks his promise broke his promise. So Krishna arranged for Krishna to break his promise. But on another principle, holding above his promise the protection of his devotees. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta vanashati. Krishna's promise is that to his devotee is never vanquished. And Krishna holds that promise dearer than I won't fight on the battlefield. To protect Arjuna, Krishna broke his promise. So when Bhishma Dev was seeing Krishna standing before him along with the Pandavas, and when that day came, Makara Sankranti came, where the sun started moving in the northerly direction, Bhishma Dev then exercised the option that Maharaj Santanu, his father, had given him, that he could only give up his body when he so desired. So he chose to give up his body. And he withdrew from this exchange with Maharaj Yudhisthira and the whole world. He withdrew his senses, pratyahara, consolidated his senses in concentrated thought upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And although he recognized that Krishna in his four-armed form was standing before him specifically because that's a form that Bhishma Dev understood him as, the personality of Godhead, in his mind, because of his ecstatic love for Krishna, he saw that form of Krishna that was charging at him. Instead of the four-armed form of Krishna standing, he saw the form of Krishna, describes very beautifully, holding the broken chariot wheel of Arjuna in his right arm, beads of perspiration dripping down his face that was ashen due to the dust raised by the horses on the battlefield, and his upper garment practically falling off and flying in the wind as Krishna was charging at Grandfather Bhishma to smash him with the chariot wheel. This is Grandfather Bhishma's special appreciation of seeing that darshan of Krishna upon giving up his body. Similarly, when Haridas Thakur desired to give up his body, because his body was old, and because his body was so old, he couldn't chant properly his 300,000 names of the Supreme Lord every day, 3 times 64 rounds every day. And he wouldn't eat until he completed his 3 times 64 rounds. If we did that, we'd starve. We can't imitate, in other words. So Lord Chaitanya advised him, Haridas, you don't have to, you're already liberated. You don't have to keep this vrata. You're a perfected soul. Take some prasadam. I brought some prasadam of Lord Jagannath to you. You can't refuse. So Haridas wanted to refuse, but he couldn't refuse because it was Mahaprasadam. So he took a little piece of Mahaprasadam and said to Lord Chaitanya, I have just one request to make of you. Yes, 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 whatever it is. How much prasadam do you want? No, no, not prasadam. Another kind of prasadam. I don't want to be present and experience devastation when you complete your pastimes. I don't want to experience that pain of separation from you when you complete your pastime. So I would like to leave my body first. And when I leave my body, I'd like to see your form standing before me as I call your holy name and in that condition give up my body. Lord Chaitanya's reply was, the Supreme Personality of Godhead considers you very dear to him. Surely he will grant your request. So the next day when Lord Chaitanya came, voluntarily, just like Haridas Thakur, voluntarily, excuse me, just like Grandfather Bhishma, voluntarily gave up his body. Haridas Thakur similarly, at his own volition, who can do this? Just relinquished the soul's connection with the body, seeing the form of Lord Chaitanya, calling his holy name. And left behind his body and entered the spiritual world. Personally, Lord Chaitanya lifted the thin, emaciated, practically, body of Haridas Thakur on his lap, began kirtan, and with the dead body, transcendentally spiritualized body of Haridas Thakur began dancing and dancing and dancing and twirling around and dancing in ecstasy, and led the kirtan party to the sea with his hands. He personally bathed the body of Haridas Thakur. With his hands, he personally dug a pit in the ground and placed the body of Haridas Thakur in samadhi. And with his own hand began covering the body of Haridas Thakur and arranged for a huge feast in the honor of the disappearance, the departure of Haridas Thakur for the spiritual world. And in the pastime of Srila Prabhupada's departure from this world, which we're honoring today, those who were present, I wasn't personally present, but news was coming daily to those temples where the devotees couldn't attend, so they stayed behind looking after the temple and the deities. But as many devotees as we could spare were present. And it was understood, it was like Grandfather Bhishma, Prabhupada was choosing when, if and when he would leave his body. Although he was saying otherwise, it's up to Krishna. But he was making such choice. And in a very transcendentally clever way, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, Srila Prabhupada, you are one of Krishna's great soldiers. And to leave your body in this way, it won't be the same as if you die on the battlefield. So all of your devotees all over the world, they're waiting for you to come and uplift them by your transcendental association. And he was going on, and Prabhupada interrupted and said, yes, let's go. Get the ticket and get my visas and let's go. And he started naming the places that he would go to pay to visit, to enliven the devotees with whatever capacity and strength was left in his body. He didn't make the whole tour because he had some medical complications, so he came back. After reaching as far as London, he came back to Bombay and then to Vrindavan. But I can share with you as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada that he was keenly aware that at Krishna's moment's notice, no prior notice necessary for Krishna, without notice Krishna could take him wherever Krishna wanted him to go, and he was gone. So he was very concerned, explicitly very concerned, about what this verse is describing. That is, leaving behind a boat to cross the ocean of material existence after he was gone. And very, very, very carefully, he built that boat. He didn't call it a boat, but the means of conquest in the language of Srimad Bhagavatam specifically was the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll just share a couple of things about Prabhupada's health condition. I don't know the detail of it, but this much I know from Hari Sori Prabhu. Most human bodies have two kidneys, and the function of the kidney is to eliminate toxins from the body, and it does so through the urine of the body, and the kidneys draw the toxins out and they eliminate them. Prabhupada had a half of a kidney. One wasn't working at all, and the other was half working. I didn't know this until just 2 or 3 years ago. Many devotees knew. I didn't know. Prabhupada was in constant pain. Pain. I don't know if they didn't know about kidney transplants at that time, but he was in constant pain. But we didn't know he was in constant pain. He just went on. And from the age of 70 to whatever it was, 70, it's 83 or something like that, Srila Prabhupada traveled around the world 14 times and kept a schedule that his healthy young Americans couldn't keep up with. In fact, they had to have two young, healthy, strong, you know, 20, 23-year-old, you know, athletic types just to keep up with Prabhupada's schedule, and they couldn't keep up with Prabhupada's schedule. They would wear out. At that age, with his health condition being what it was, he was indomitable. Nothing could stop him. And with all of the work that he did, from early, early morning till the end of the day, his sleeping activity, his schedule was, I had first-hand experience of this, around 9 o'clock, everything would stop. For 15 or 20 minutes, not much fluctuation, he would go to a room and sit with the harmonium and sing. Fix his mind upon the glorifications of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinod Thakur and our great Vaishnava Acharyas, and sing Vaishnava bhajans, glorifications of Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. And then at 9:15, 9:20, all the lights would go out. At 11:15 or 11:20, 2 hours of rest, the light would go on in his room. And then he went to the wash his face and cleanse his teeth. And then another light would go on. That was the table where he would sit and do his translation work. And I was fascinated by... I can share this with you because I was the night guard. I was during the first visit of Srila Prabhupada when I was in the New York temple, I was the temple commander. And anybody that's been a temple commander knows what that means. You try to get other people to do things, and if you can't find other people to do things, you do it yourself because it has to get done. And nobody says thank you. It's a thankless task. So one of the services that needed to be done was getting persons to guard Prabhupada's quarters because we didn't want anyone to disturb him. We were in Brooklyn. What that means is, you know, anything could happen at any time, and so we had to guard. There were two entrances. One was from the ground floor, and the other was from the back, because behind the building there was a little garden. Not an attractive garden, just some landscaping, some flowering trees, and a little garden that we used for the deities. Then a big, tall perimeter wall, like you know in India, but a tall one. One you too tall to climb over. But, you know, in Brooklyn, anything could happen. So we guarded the back door, and we guarded the entrance into his quarters. And it was real easy to get somebody to guard the entrance to his quarters. They could tell people, you can't come here. I'm guarding Prabhupada's door. So, and then at night, it was easy also because the door to his quarters opened into his quarters, and so the person could roll out their sleeping bag, put their head next to the door, and no one could come in. Or if they banged their head, they wake them up. Plus the door was bolted. But even if it was some dangerous situation, they would wake up, so they could sleep. So 24 hours a day, one door was covered, and 24 hours a day, the back was covered. Except at night. Nobody wanted to do it because we were all tired from the whole day. So the temple commander took that shift, guarding Prabhupada's quarters at night in the back. But I liked it because I could watch what Prabhupada did when everyone else was out horizontal. Prabhupada was up vertical. 2 hours he rested. Then he would do his translation work from like 11:30 in the morning until 4 in the morning. 4.5 hours every night while we were sound asleep. He was with his big... I was impressed also with the size of these books that were the commentaries of the Acharyas in Sanskrit. Big-sized books, the kind that you have to open like that. And he had 4 or 5 of them spread out on this big table, and he would run his finger across the page with his spectacles and go each commentary, and then he'd pull out the dictaphone and dictate the Bhaktivedanta purports and back and forth because it had a rewind and he could listen and then correct and do his own editing on the dictaphone. 4.5 hours. And then he would go take a bath and sit down in his same table and chant his japa. While we were having Mangal Arati, he was chanting his japa. And then at 6 o'clock in the morning, he would go for a morning walk from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock somewhere. And then 7 o'clock, greeting the deities, 7:15, Guru Puja, and then morning class. And so on. That was his daily schedule. But and each time of the day was very regulated. Like, you could set your watch by whatever he was doing without having a watch. You could just, okay, it's now 8:15. It's time to... Very, very regulated. And a key part of that regulation, as busy as he was, writing letters to his 4,500 disciples, whoever it was that wrote, and conducting the affairs of the society and training the GBC and this and that and the other thing and problems and properties and everything. That was one part of the day. And then at his arrangement for lunch was that precisely at 12 o'clock he would go take bath. After bath, he would sit and chant Gayatri. After Gayatri, it was time for lunch. And it had to be right on time and hot. And he was very particular about it. He would take a nap for 10 to 12 minutes and not more. And then he'd get up and have an afternoon of either continuing correspondence or receiving guests. And if there were neither to do, he would have an open darshan. And then the evening program. And then 9 o'clock, sit with the harmonium, 9:15, 9:20, lights out. 11:15, 11:20, up and doing his translating work every day. And if he went to another place in another time zone, he was right on the same schedule the next day. Didn't matter what the time zone was. It was his regulation. And the dedication was to provide Srimad Bhagavatam for all of us. I shared this once, but I'll share it again. I think it was here I shared. One of the favorite, there were two most favorite events in those who were associating with Prabhupada. One was when he would receive book distribution scores. He'd stop everything and read the book distribution scores and light up to see so many of his books being distributed. And the second was when new publications, everything else, it doesn't matter, everything else would stop, and very reverentially, he'd take the book, inspect the quality of the printing, because he knew about printing, the quality of the color separations. He examined meticulously, and those that were with him described it was the most joyous moments of all with Prabhupada. It made him so happy to receive the printing of his hard work, the fruit of his hard work, which would then be available for us for generations to come. So one time he was looking through, like I described, and he closed the book like this. He looked at the devotees in the room and said, "One day there may be no temples. One day there may be no devotees, but there will always be my books." It was his gift to the world to cross over the ocean of material existence. It's exactly what it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam what's intended for, and Prabhupada was the instrument of the disciplic succession and the instrument of Vyasadeva and the instrument of all well-wishers of mankind in the age of Kali to provide this means of conquest. That light in the dark age of Kali. And he didn't just want his disciples to distribute the books and not read them. He said that specifically. What's the use? These are for you. You should read them. You should know them. They should be the light of your life. That's why I'm making them. In many cases, the publications were in number enough, at least when the BBT didn't have so much resource, at least for the devotees to read. He wanted the devotees to read. And then he wanted them translated in so many languages. And as they were translated in so many languages, it meant these are people who Prabhupada never met, perhaps would never meet. But the compassion, the bursting forth of compassion to give the means in this dark age of Kali to become free from the unnecessary suffering that's found in this age of Kali, abundant everywhere, not just one part of the world or one class of people in one part of the world, all types of people everywhere, to mitigate the unnecessary suffering. This was the means. And the verse describes, this is the demigods praying to Krishna while still within the womb of Devaki. Their prayer is saying, you see the plan of your devotee who leaves behind the means for conquest, for crossing the ocean of material existence that your devotee has left behind. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept this method to help them. That is to say, Krishna's empowerment, Krishna's full mercy empowerment, is embedded within this means. So, Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai, the seed of bhakti is given, and the seed of bhakti is similarly nourished in the same way. Having personally observed Prabhupada's schedule and how much it meant to him to have the time to translate and to complete the Bhagavatam, which he didn't do because he translated so many other things in between. He translated 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he translated the summary study of the 10th canto in the form of Krishna book. And he translated Nectar Devotion and Nectar of Instruction and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya and so many other things. He was a literary person, but it was out of compassion for us to give us the means to terminate this cycle of birth and death and come to the spiritual world, as was the beck and call of the Personality of Godhead by revealing himself in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So one fitting way of glorifying Srila Prabhupada and honoring Srila Prabhupada on his disappearance day is hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam. And regularly hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam in a manner that Srila Prabhupada particularly prescribed. Those are his followers, those members of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, and even those that just appreciate the gift that Srila Prabhupada gave to the world. It's encapsulated within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very, very glorious work that he did. So, sometime during the rest of the day, if you have the time, try to make the time, read some pages of Srimad Bhagavatam and read them in the following mood. Read with the mood that this very magnanimous great Acharya wanted to deliver me. He wanted to deliver the world, but he also specifically wanted to deliver me from the clutches of birth and death. What is that message that he gave for that purpose, to deliver me? Let me try to hear it and receive it carefully. Read just a few pages like that as an offering to Srila Prabhupada on his disappearance day. May that which you wanted to give us be fulfilled. Because even as quoting our founder Acharya, even one page, even one line, even one word, if heard properly, can relieve one from the sojourn of material existence. So try to hear properly like that. Receive that gift, the boat to cross over the ocean of material existence. Receive it carefully. Make your life perfect that way. And create situations where you can give that to others. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.